If you're a physician who wants more autonomy in how you practice or fulfillment in your life, you're in the right place. This is the Change Physician Podcast, where our guests reveal how you can learn the mindsets, skills, and strategies to create the life you want without selling out your morals or values. But before we begin, I want to remind you of the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you at thechangephysician.com.
Welcome back to The Change Physician. I am Melissa Cady, the Challenge Doctor, with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Caccaro, bringing you today Saturday Salutations. Of course, we're here to share not only our recent episodes, but just say hello to everyone and to each other as co-hosts from the West Coast to Austin, Texas. You can't say bicoastal.
Two-thirds of the country.
I guess I'm almost Gulf Coast, but anyway. So we're here to share some of our thoughts or recent events or favorite things. We used to do Friday faves, but we find that Saturday is way more convenient in the afternoon. So you can find us here pretty much, you know, every Saturday, 2 p.m. Central, 12 p.m. Pacific time, unless we're taking a little hiatus or vacation or something. But thank you for joining us. Or if this
pushing it to Sundays, because sometimes, you know.
Yeah, sometimes Sunday salutations. Yeah. SS, it works. So we're here to just say hello. And if you're capturing it on a recording, if you ever have any comments or have things that you'd love to hear in future episodes or, you know, talk about, you can always leave the comments or send an email to Dr. Kevin at thechangephysician.com. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay. Well, how are you?
I am well. Saturday. We're salutating. So, you know, what else could be? What could be wrong with that's the word when you're salutating with your friends?
That is a unique name.
Is that even an actual
word? I'm about to look. I don't know if that is a word.
We can make it one as long as we use it enough.
It can go in Urban Dictionary.
Well, and eventually it gets adopted into the real dictionary.
Hmm.
And there's something to be said for creation of words, right? So you know, oh, that's not a real word. Well, if you create it and the word has shared meaning, then it's actually part of language, right?
Yeah. First
word. And there, this always makes me think of we've talked about how emotions are made with Lisa Feldman Barrett's book on kind of construction and emotions and stuff. And she does a lot about concepts. And what I always found really cool is words convey meaning for a specific concept, and the more specific the word, the more you get more emotional granularity, and there's some significant benefits to it. Like being able to, instead of just saying, if you only have one anger or one word for anger, right? So then whenever, if you're annoyed, you're angry. If you're upset, you're angry. And so it becomes this big, broad thing. But if you can make up a word like Leifensoppen, right? And what that means is I'm angry because my wife didn't make enough coffee. It becomes a very specific thing that's annoyance with your spouse when they don't make enough coffee. And what that allows you to do is a very specific granularity to that emotion, which doesn't necessarily bleed over to something else. Because then if you get upset in a different way, you can actually express that through a different word. I'm annoyed because, I'm angry at, I'm upset with, I'm raging because. Anyway, it's fun because she talks about that with like the there's some Filipino headhunter word that means like the joy you get when from killing your enemy or something. And it's like, if you could use these, you can actually then process emotions in ways that are much more constructive rather than destructive. So that's a long way to say salutating. We're going to make that into a word. When salutating is that friendly banter with friends at long distance via Zoom. See, look at that.
Let's put that in the dictionary.
In the salutating. Have you been salutating much lately? You need to
that
do more.
That sounds like salivating. I don't know.
That's a little bit different. Yeah.
Yes, that is different.
You know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to share some things that actually I will segue it from emotions in a way that you may not think I'm going to say, but why don't we let people know what happened this past week, which would be episode 196 on Sunday release. It was a deep dive on Paul Thomas's book, Dressing Well in Medicine, which we had a two-part episode 194 and 195 that covered our discussion with Paul Thomas about the issues that surround that. But of course, Kevin and I talk about our thoughts on it in our Sunday episode this past week. But also, there was an episode on Thursday, the veil of ignorance. Did you want to make any comments about any of those?
Dr. Paul Thomas, Plum Health out in Michigan, fantastic guy. I mean, the biggest takeaway, and we said this last week, is just that there's dressing well. The book is about professionalism, and there's a lot more in there. Like, again, how can you write 300 plus words in a book when you have a big topic on professionalism and the importance in medicine? So yeah. It's actually, I don't know, I'd go there if you're interested in that. It's more than just dressing well, although that's definitely important as well. The veil of ignorance was, I actually say that shared a little bit, and you know, our families watch this, right? And so, I guess it hit my mother pretty hard in a good way. So I appreciate that, Mom, that you enjoyed it so much and were talking with your friends with it. But I think it's a very important one. And the veil of ignorance is basically talking about this idea about a just society. And you can put that in any way, shape, or form is, if you couldn't choose, like if you had to design a situation or experience in such a way that everybody, that you had to be a participant in that experience, but you didn't get to decide your role, how would you design that experience? So that could be cultural, that could be the nation, that can be a society, but it can be simple as an interaction. And it kind of can reflect back in a lot of ways of treat others how you want to be treated, no matter who they are. Mm-hmm. Ideas of choice, obviously, ideas of justice. There's a whole lot more we could have discussed there. And maybe we will, because it seemed to resonate with some people. And I do think it's very important, these kind of philosophical concepts that come from these thought games, but really kind of have an idea of how do you make a better society? And ultimately, like, how do you become a better person, which is sort of what the Change Physician is about. So,
big episode. Yeah, I like that. I didn't expect you to go on that a little bit, and I'm glad you did. And I'm glad your mom enjoyed it. So, to jump off of the comments about, you know, emotions earlier, we know that there's a lot of phenomena that happen as
phenomena.
Speaking of that, that's like, I was just listening to actually Lorimer Mosley, his master.
Are you session. In? Are you doing his master sessions?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought about it.
I started it, and I just have too much going on. I'm gonna have to like go listen to it later. But if no one knows what Lorimer Mosley is, who that is, just look up Australia Lorimer Mosley. But if you're in the pain world,
you should know him.
You should.
If you don't know him in the pain world,
you have not gotten up.
You're not into pain. That's period. You don't know pain. You're even approaching it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He was talking about. They started playing this, like, I'm going on a tangent here, but they started playing some music, and there was instrumental, that's it. But your brain starts playing the words in your head, and you're like, you don't really appreciate it until you really start to break it down and you're unpacking this. Like, how is that happening? Like you don't have to hear the words, but you start hearing the voice, and your brain is like amazing.
Yeah, no, it's predicting. And he did a super cool exercise in 2016 at EP3 in Seattle, where he had the audience. He was trying to kind of discuss neural networks, and we had tables and around this big audience thing. And he had, okay, every time this happens, someone stands up from this table. And then when they stand up, you're going to stand up, and who's going to stand up. And they were doing all this stuff. And so people are standing up, and he starts doing it faster and faster and faster. And at some point, people who were supposed to be standing up, or not standing up all the time, but it was just enough that they were standing up quite a bit. They just didn't sit down. And it was like, see, that's what happens. So if you're wondering how you get these triggers that can create an experience of pain in situations which are no longer as relevant as, say, the original scenario, it's because of this firing and how they get used to firing. It was fascinating. So
yeah,
he's just awesome. He's like the best, just the best.
So I have to say, I just had a patient that had to do with general anesthesia for a pre-op, and I'm not going to speak details, but basically some pain issues, underlying anxiety, hypervigilance. I'm feeling off of this person. And I said, I basically shared the, because I was trying to just give tidbits and just express that I was trying to be caring, not judgy. And, you know, it's a real hard thing when you know they have a different belief. But at the end, she was like, so do you do any like work on the side to help people like understand their pain? Like, I've tried this, 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 and this. And I was like, it's like, so I have a colleague. He did this thing called whywehurt.com. And I send her there. And then I know a couple people that are a little bit more advanced in their physical therapy training and gave her those links. But it is, I forgot what my whole point was, but I just thought it was, there's just so much conceptually in our beliefs that we need help with along the way to help guide us. And it's just really, it's kind of neat to just share that stuff with people, and you just don't know what they're going to do with it. You know, you just kind of like, here you go, start your journey. You know, I wish you the best. And
that's so true though. It sounds like, well, what do you mean? It, you can't, like, if you can't, it, you literally can give them a map, but you have to trust that they're actually going to follow themselves. Because yeah, you can't, like, and that's like, it's interesting in our community, even with people who have lived experience, we're talking like some, like 67 years of being in pain and then and transforming their life. Like, it is super cool. And yeah, they're like, you know, I've tried to persuade people and they just don't listen. So I've just kind of listened, you know, just kind of wait, kind of throw some seeds out and kind of wait and then see if they're going to follow the map or not. But
yeah,
that's the most frustrating thing, I think. But I think that is relevant to a lot of medicine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
certainly with pain, certainly. With
that, yeah, pain. A lot of this is a process. And I was, you know, we could have another conversation about just our lessons from Lorimer Mosley and other people that kind of in that same space. But it was very, the initial parts of talking about some of the main concepts was real reassuring to me, because I think, you know, the mind shift that happens for people is believing that some of these concepts are actually important, you know, like the adaptability or bioplasticity of your body. If you don't know what that is, go look it up. because, and just like your thoughts and how it impacts your behaviors and how you perceive pain or what it is. I mean, all those things just, they tie in together, and that you talk about these people of 50 years of pain or whatever, and that shift, it can be so powerful. Like, just, it's mind blowing. But anyway, but it does take a lot of patience, for your patients, if you have any, trying to get through that stuff. But my whole point, right, was I interrupting you?
No, I was like, my whole point, you gotta get to the pictures. I know there's pictures in here at some
there
point.
Is. Okay. So you talked about emotions, and we talked about pain, and this all ties together. It's mm-hmm. all about emergent phenomenon, which, if you don't believe pain's emergent, you might need to look that up too. Just like the weather, there are so many variables that create this experience, or your brain is trying to construct an impression, or you're constructing emotions. It's not one single place in the brain. There's multiple contributors. Same thing for the world of nature and outside of the human body. But when you're in a garden or a yard and you're trying to have things happen, I had to just show you the emergence of some things. So that's what I was going to share. So let me pull up my screen here. So I finally have, can you see that?
Oh, it was an arbor thing.
Yes, but
it looked like
all those leaves were not there, and uh-huh. they've been there before, and, you know, sparse and probably didn't water enough. And I put some stones down there to kind of hold on to the water a little bit better. And then you got a little bit closer, and actually it looks even better today. I should have gotten a more recent picture, but I'm going to do a new share here with what you can see on the underside and some lovely grapes. I got bundles of these underneath all those leaves. So I can't tell you exactly which grape it is, but each side has a different grape. So they're not seedless, so unfortunately. But here's the other share that I'm very excited about. And these do well in Austin, if you're in Austin, Texas. They're evergreen, and they talked about these before, but do you know which plant this is?
That's your purple.
It's pineapple guava.
Pineapple guava. I was going to say purple guava thing. Yeah. And you can eat the flowers.
Yes.
I saw your post on Facebook.
Oh, so you cheated. That's okay. No, but I was like, oh, and there's about eight more already popped up in that same bush. So
what about anyway. The pineapple guava? What does that look like? Is it yummy?
Don't know yet. They should follow the flowers. Usually how it turns out. But
did we talk about fruit before? We did talk about fruit, didn't we?
What do you mean?
In the realm of travel, like
fruit.
I'll hold it off and okay. Remember it later. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm super like, I get more excited about edibles just because I can actually eat them. I've been very disappointed, Kevin, in the 700 tulip bulbs that I planted. And I think about four of them emerged with a tulip and the other is just sitting there with the green leaves. It was kind of like, I'm coming out. No, I'm coming out. And it just kept doing this, like, I'm psyched out by all this crazy weather and you're like up to 100 degrees. I don't know what to do with you. So, so I'm down with tulip bulbs. So if they don't come back, I'm, you know, no love lost here. I'm just, I have decided. This is my other share. Let me pull it up. I know this might bore everybody because I'm just talking about garden stuff. I never thought I'd be that person, but. I will share this one. It is on the screen. Hold on. Now there is an animal in the background that happens to be my neighbor's. Let's just make that clear. He likes to say hi. That is Tom the cat, who decided to take a nap.
Yeah.
But there's a little shrivelly leaves on the left one. That's Java ginseng. If you ever wonder
like what Java ginseng.
Java ginseng. Have a few supports because they tend to splay because they have heavy limbs there. But on the right is Echinacea. Mm. So for those of you who like the Echinacea lozenges and all this stuff for health of immune, if you notice, they're called coneflowers also, but you can see they start off with like a little green, yellow. You can see different ages in there. Those are the early onset flowers. And then as they get widen out, you'll see the pale pink and then a little bit of a flat center. And you can see towards the middle, there's like what looks like a upside down cone kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's how they end up. You can start seeing a little pollen there.
So that's the cone flower part.
Yep, that's the cone flower. So it's Echinacea. I don't know too much about them yet, but I will tell you, I planted these last summer and they were little and they didn't really have flowers because they were kind of past that point. And this thing survived the winter. I mentioned this before, but I am surprised that nobody talks about these plants. Because if you want something evergreen, but flowers every year and is, you know, a pollinator friendly kind of thing and is deer resistant or they don't seem to want to go for those. They're kind of rough leaves. They're drought tolerant, frost tolerant, make flowers and deer resistant. And I have decided to buy a ton of seeds and I'm going to mass plantings of them.
Mass Echinacea.
So. Anyway, I've fallen in love with such great qualities to that because we live in crazy weather here in Austin. So that's my share.
The map, though, you guys are like zone 8.
8B.
So we're at 8B too.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You get more rainfall than us.
I know.
That's, but I guess from a temperature standpoint,
it's
more about the freezing temp, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently the Echinacea, I don't know if it's 2 to 9 or 2 to 10, the zones. So
they vary. Oh, big broad one. So it goes all over. Yeah. The place.
So that's the thing I've learned. The ones that have done well with my poorly green thumb is it seems to be the ones that have a wide range of zones. Mm. So they tend, I feel like they just, I don't know. They're more resilient. Catnip has done great.
You mean that they're more resilient and adapted to a wide range of zones?
That's what I think. Because of what?
Because it makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, this plant can grow all over the place and somehow they survive in my backyard.
Exactly. That's how I target my plants.
Oh. There might be something I don't know what it is.
He's a jerk. no, so hey, I'm gonna go into a different plant because I find it interesting. I didn't know this. Everyone's heard of monarch butterflies, right?
No. Yes.
Okay.
But you don't see a lot of butterflies anymore.
You know, that's really sad.
It is really sad.
Yeah, and well, speaking of our world, we're not doing a great job worrying about our wildlife as much, but milkweed.
Milkweed. They love milkweed. That's what they need to survive on, right? That's the only thing they eat or something?
So apparently that's where the larvae are, so they can feed off of whatever this milkweed, in order for them to actually thrive, their next generation. I don't know what it is about it. I haven't looked into it, but it's an important nectar source for natives. But let's see, larval food source for monarch butterflies and their relatives. So I made a small donation to Arbor Day Foundation. It's local, and they sent me 3 bare roots. So it's easy to like send in the mail. And I was like, these things just look dead. Like, you know, so I just put them in the backyard in a section, and I actually planted it wrong. And I had to go back and dig and push it all the way down. And then I watered it deeply. And then I think I watered it one more time. And I totally forgot about it. I'm like, oh, like a week or two later, I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go check that spot. And they're already like this tall. So I've got 3 milkweeds that are kind of native and good for butterflies. So, you know, I'm trying to like more encourage the pollinator stuff and the edibles, but yeah, I'm like, you know, you get stuff that's native and, you know, it's beneficial for a lot of the, you know, pollinators and things that you need to support. But okay, I've talked a lot about my yard, but there you go.
Those are made me think a lot of different things. First is like butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot more butterflies when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like it slow and goes away.
Look at the pesticide crap we use. I mean, I think there's something to say about that too.
Yeah. But they're just, it's really sad. I mean, you just don't see butterflies like we used to see them.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the food, that was the other one. I would have sworn because, you know, if you travel a lot, like particularly in the day and age of like Amazon and shipping, you can buy almost anything.
Yeah.
And what I always found is very frustrating because it's like, well, why would I go someplace and buy it if I can buy it and they can ship it to me? And a lot of times it's cheaper than wherever I'm going. Oh, yeah. Buy local. Well, I'm not going to buy local if it's the same stuff and it's cheaper. I'm sorry. Like there got to be a reason for me to do it other than just to say that.
Yeah.
But I kind of experienced that food is a big one and fruits are fascinating to me because there are so many fruits in this world that you just don't see anywhere else.
Yes.
And so I think that's the fun part. If you get to a place and have, go eat the unique fruit, like find that unique fruit. Cause some of the, you know, some of it just doesn't travel. Like you, I think you have a loquat, right? You have a loquat in your backyard.
Oh, but I got to get a picture of that for you because the one that I almost killed, it's like thriving.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love loquats.
Yeah.
But you don't see loquats in the store. And I think it's cause the fruit's so tender. Like they're
I've actually told someone what I had and they're like, what's that? I'm like,
oh man, they're so good.
I'm like, my friend loves them. I think I might like them. I'm just assuming I'll like them.
Yeah. But anyway, and then when we were in Mexico a long, long time ago, before my wife and I were married down on the Yucatan and down at the Zocalo, there was people selling fruit and they had these like guayadas. I can't even say it. I've never found them again, but they were super, super yummy. I may never have them again in my life because I can't find them. But it's super. I just love eating the foods that are specific to a region that you can't get anywhere else. And fruit's a very good one to do.
Yeah, that's a good reminder that if you live in zone 9-10 or higher, I don't even know how many total zones there are. 8B is kind of tough. I tend to kill off some of these tropical things. But if you're more in tropical kind of weather, really should check out So Exotic, SOWEXOTIC.com. They've got, it's like you're searching for all these fruits you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're half the stuff I've never heard of before. And it's, I mean, I can't make some of these things survive in my own, you know, environment. I tried, and some of them, like the echinacea, that's just done awesome. But, and some of the spinaches and herbs, they'd be great. But yeah, you really have to be in that right zone. But
I just went to their website, and it looks like you can actually search the zone. So if you just put zone 8, it'll pop. It popped up.
Did they do that?
6 things in here: figs, which we know we have a fig tree; guava, lemon guava; star anise; red.
No way! Did they just add that? Because I sent an email 2 weeks ago and said, is there any way to get a search engine? Because I didn't have a search engine for, look at me, I'm getting all excited.
Well, let me see if I'm going to put zone 10 and see what happens. Oh, then that changed, but that doesn't make any sense.
Where did you
saying put blueberries in zone 10? That doesn't make sense at all.
Where did you find the zones?
Well, I put it in their search bar, so it may not be, it's not looking like it's correct, because I don't think that Zen 10 has blueberries growing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, normally they have it under like the medicinal, culinary herbs, rare fruiting plants, citrus tree. They won't mail out citrus because it has to stay in Florida or something like that. But anyway, for those of you who just want to look at some really unique plants and fruits, and they're like exotic to us. So super cool.
I'm just salivating now looking at this stuff.
I know. You could spend quite a few hours just like searching. I think they could improve their search engine based on zone, but they pretty much said it's tropical. I'm like, yeah, but you might want to just put in a section that's for people that are not in that, because there's people buying it outside of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very cool.
But yeah, it's a cute little, there's other businesses out there, but they've done a good job shipping plants. So there you go. Any final thoughts?
No, other than it's always a pleasure salutating with you on Saturdays.
Yeah.
Salutating. Hope, so, and you want to take it out, or you want me to take it out?
You take it out.
Okay, I was going to say, well, thank you all for joining us on Saturday Salutations. I hope you make it a point to salutate with your friends via Zoom, or having these daily interactions in a distant manner with the people that you care about, salutating. You should use it in a sentence today. And you can join us next week at Saturday Salutations, and we can do some more salutating. And until then, stay well.
Take care.
I like salutating.
Thank you for joining us today on the Change Physician Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please let us know by going to thechangephysician.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you simply by joining the community at thechangephysician.com.